It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
But the good news is, with proper preparation, you don't necessarily have to give up, because even if there is a policy, and even if the employer can argue that it was violated, you may have a bunch of defenses. You don't have to walk away from this. The policy might be ambiguous. It might be open to two reasonable interpretations, for example.
Employment law attorney Mark Barron explains how he saves the careers of government employees through the effective use of grievance procedures. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll find out that insurance rates in Virginia's health insurance marketplace under Obamacare are much lower than expected. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 217, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Leading up to open enrollment in the new market for private health insurance, which began October 1st and runs through March 31st, 2014, there was a lot of unfounded speculation that the insurance plans would be shockingly expensive. But the rates are in, the marketplace is open, and the comprehensive coverage offered actually costs less than expected. Nationally, rates are 16% lower than originally projected by the Congressional Budget Office. And many consumers can get tax credits to lower the price and make the coverage even more affordable. Tax credits are available to people with incomes between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level. Factoring in the tax credits, nearly 250,000 uninsured Virginians will be able to get the lowest cost bronze plan at no monthly cost, or a more comprehensive silver plan for less than $75 per month through the marketplace. And in Virginia, consumers have a wide variety of affordable, comprehensive plans available to them. Depending on where they live, consumers have from 27 to 68 plans to choose from. With the marketplace open and financial assistance available, it's time to start shopping for quality, affordable coverage. In other news, the longer the partial government shutdown lasts, the greater the danger that Virginia's already slow economic recovery will be stopped dead in its tracks. Looking just at civilian employees of the federal government, that's 1 in 20 Virginia jobs, compared to 1 in 47 in the country as a whole. Those jobs alone account for 9% of earnings in the state. Federal contracting, especially by the Defense Department, is another big piece of the story. Procurement contracts paid to Virginia companies were worth $58.5 billion in 2010, almost three times the level during the last federal shutdown in 1996. Altogether, the Washington, D.C. region could be losing $200 million a day in economic activity. Counting both civilian and military employment, 1 in 12 Virginia jobs is direct federal employment. That's over twice the national average. And because those jobs are relatively well paid, about 15% of all earnings in the state come from federal jobs. This could mean trouble for Virginia's ability to fund schools, health care, and other services. Withholdings from federal contractors accounted for $483 million of Virginia's income tax revenue last year, and the related professional and business services sector brought in another $286 million. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the far west end of the city of Richmond, and we're speaking with employment law attorney Mark Barron, and we will be talking today about the employment and grievance rights of state and local government employees. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
Well, now, the first thing our listeners would like to know probably is, why are the rights of government employees different than the rights of non-government employees? Non-government employees, of course, it is basically employment at will. Could you explain briefly what is employment at will, and then we'll go into why government employees are different?
Very good question. I get asked that all the time. The employment at will doctrine, very much alive here in Virginia and in most states, simply says that a private employer is free to hire, fire at his will, at his choosing, any of his employees. And there are just a few exceptions to that. But the basic rule is, if you're a private employee working for a private employer, which are most employees, you can be fired for any reason, like I like to say, any reason, no reason, an untrue reason, an unjust reason. Now, the few exceptions have to do with, for example, if you have a discrimination case, which is actually, most people actually end up losing those cases, but it can be won if you have solid evidence. Another exception might be if you had a contract that said that you cannot be fired except for good cause, which again, most people don't have. Another exception could be if you were fired and you can prove this because you wanted to do something the law told you you should do and your employer did not want you to do this, or because your employer was breaking a law and you brought it to his attention, and then he got even with you by retaliating and firing you. Those are exceptions. They're not that frequent, but they do happen. But again, most private employees can be fired at the will of the employer. Now, when it comes to government employees, they have more legal rights in the sense that they usually, if they're a full-time tenured employee, they've gotten off of probation, they could be local, state, federal government, then they have rights that kick in that protect them from arbitrary dismissals. In other words, like in the state of Virginia, for example, there's a grievance procedure that applies to all full-time civil servants that work for the state of Virginia that are off probation. And this grievance procedure gives them an avenue to try to protect themselves against arbitrary adverse employment actions.
And does this grievance procedure, does it vary by agency, or is there one standard set of rules that apply to all of the agencies, federal, state, local, or is it like all state employees have the same procedure and all local employees in a particular locality have the same procedure? How does that exactly work?
You're a state employee. Yes, there is one grievance procedure that applies to all state employees. Yes. And if you're in a particular local government, there's one grievance procedure that applies. Now, for federal employees, the main procedure is the Merit System Protection Board, the MSPB. There are some other little variations, but that's the main procedure that applies to all tenured federal employees. So this grievance procedure protects you or gives you the ability to try to protect your job from not only dismissals, but also from any other adverse employment action, which would be things like a poor performance evaluation, which could be later on lead to a dismissal. So you might want to grieve that, for example. You might want to say that that performance evaluation is arbitrary, meaning that it ignores certain real facts that are relevant to your job. You might be demoted. You can grieve that. You might be written up with, like for the state of Virginia, it would be called a written notice. And it could be different levels. It could be a group one, which is kind of minor, like you were late to work, for example. Most people, if they call me up and they want to fight that, I say to them, look, it's about the same cost to fight that as it is to fight a dismissal. So you might not want to fight that. But if you really, really want to, if that's all you have on your record, fine, I'll do it. The next level is a group two. That's a little more serious. And that could be typically for disobeying a supervisor's instructions or orders or written policies. Now, at that point, I would say to the employee, this is a different story. If you get one more of these, you can be fired. So you might want to draw the line now if you think that your supervisor has it out for you. And of course, the next highest level is a group three, and that could be things like forgery, alleged forgery, etc. And then you're going to be fired. And of course, you want to fight that.
Now, is there any limitation on what can be grieved, or can pretty much anything be grieved? The poor performance you mentioned, the demotion, the written notice, the dismissal, any limitation at all, or is it just any adverse action?
Actually, in this, for the Virginia state employees, you can actually start to grieve anything. However, other than a dismissal case, which they recently changed the law regarding that and said there will be no steps, you'll just go right to a hearing. Other than that, you can grieve anything, but you won't get to a hearing. The things that are worthwhile grieving are, again, an adverse employment action, something that actually affects your employment or the possibility of you losing your employment, like one of these group notices that I mentioned. You can get these group notices and not be fired, but it's a clear warning that your job's in jeopardy. So if that answers it.
I think it does. And I guess the next question is, assuming you get one of these more serious adverse actions, whether it's a group two or basically a group three that's going to result in your dismissal, what are the steps that the employee has to go through from the beginning through, I guess, the final administrative hearing to determine whether this action by the employer should be upheld or not?
Just recently, Virginia changed its law regarding the steps in a dismissal case for government employees. There are no steps. You are fired, you write your grievance within the 30-day time limit, and the next step is the hearing. However, we still have multiple steps other than in a dismissal case. And those you can have one or two steps or three steps. I like to advise my clients to take all advantage of the time that you get by having all three steps.
So what are those three steps?
Well, the first step is you would simply hand in your written grievance to your supervisor, who, of course, is probably the person that wrote the adverse action against you that you're grieving, so that won't go anywhere. But if you hand it in to him, he will turn it down, he'll hand it back to you, and then we go to the second step, which is a meeting. It's supposed to be a meeting between somebody above the supervisor and you, usually an in-person meeting. I've had it where it's been on the phone, but usually in person. And it's supposed to be, in theory, a fact-finding session. However, I caution my clients not to say very much at all, and they don't really have to, because actually anything they say can and will be often twisted against them. Now, they could have an attorney at that session. I usually don't go. I think it's a waste of the client's money. Basically, the mind has already been made up, I feel, once you've been given the written notice. I'm just going through the stages, taking the time that it affords me to even do a better preparation for the client. And then the third step would be like either the head of the agency or somebody he appoints to review what's happened. Well, that again, that's not going to usually change anything.
So you've gone through those three steps. Nothing's been changed in apparently the vast majority of cases. Where do you go from there?
You then would go to this hearing. And what happens is the current system, which has been around for many years now, you have currently one full-time hearing officer. They take on the role of a judge. They're trained attorneys. And you go to a hearing, and it's just like a court case, except the rules of evidence are relaxed. However, that one full-time hearing officer cannot possibly do all the cases. So they hire part-time lawyers who also are specially trained to handle these grievance hearings.
Yeah, I was wondering how one full-time lawyer could possibly handle all the grievance cases. This is for the entire Commonwealth of Virginia.
Yes.
So I gather they've got these part-timers scattered throughout the state.
Exactly.
So lead us through the hearing, particularly who has the burden of proof? Is it the employer to show that the discipline or adverse action was justified, or is it the employee to show that it was unjustified?
Normally, the employer has to show that the action was justified. There might be particular issues inside of a case where that burden could shift, but the overall burden remains with the employer. For example, it could shift if you're claiming retaliation. Well, then it might be your burden to prove the retaliation. But the overall burden of proof that overall the action was justified remains with the employer.
So most of these cases, I'm pretty sure, would be dismissal or termination cases. And of course, that's why we started with employment at will, because in the non-governmental sector, they don't have to have a reason. What does the government have to show in order to justify a termination from employment?
The standard of evidence is simply a preponderance of the evidence, which isn't too high. The same thing in a normal civil case. So the majority of the believable, credible, relevant evidence, if the employer has done a convincing job of that to the hearing officer, then in theory, the employer should prevail.
And what would be the legal ground? I mean, what would be the reasons that would justify a termination? I mean, obviously, it has to be more than just parking in the wrong parking place.
Well, yes. A very typical example might be an employee has received two Group 2 notices, one for at one point in time not following the instructions of a supervisor or not following a policy, and then at some other point in time, or sometimes simultaneously, getting a second group notice. Well, you've done it again, Mr. Bad Employee. You once again haven't obeyed my instructions. Well, now you're fired. So that would be a typical example. So what the employer wants to prove there is that there is this policy, that it is relevant, that you did violate it. So now the employee has to defend against that.
So at Legal Aid, we do a lot of unemployment compensation cases, and there's a test. There's actually a two-part test. You're probably familiar with it, of course, the branch test, where for the employer to show that the employee should be denied unemployment compensation, they have to show either a deliberate violation of an employer rule reasonably designed to protect the legitimate business interest of the employer, or that the employee's acts or omissions are of such a nature or so recurrent as to show a willful disregard of the duties, interests, and obligations owed the employer. Is it that stringent a test to dismiss a government employee, or is it a little bit lesser test to dismiss a government employee?
But just like with the unemployment, like you said, even if the employer could show that there is this policy, that you did, in theory, violate this policy, you're not out of the ballpark. And the same thing is true with unemployment. As you know, there's the mitigating circumstances. The same concept as applies in unemployment law applies in grievance law. Well, for most grievances, certainly for the state and the federal employees, there's mitigating circumstances.
And you could you tell us what some of those mitigating circumstances might be?
In the early days of Virginia's grievance procedure, they could be anything you wanted them to be. Anything like the poor employee was overworked, which could be true. But now, if you look at the current Virginia state grievance procedure, it says, well, there still are mitigating circumstances. It admonishes the hearing officer. It warns him. It says, don't lightly overturn what the employer did. Don't try to second guess the employer. However, there are certain situations where it would be appropriate for you to look at mitigating circumstances. And I think they named three. The employee can show that he didn't really know about the rule that you claimed that he violated. That seems fair. If it's unequal discrimination, if it's unequal treatment, that seems fair if the employee can prove that.
So it seems like to dismiss a government employee, the burden is on the employer to show basically that the employee did something wrong, knew it was wrong, and went ahead and did it anyway. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. And also there's the question, they'll take the group two, where it's alleged you violated a policy. Well, the employee might say, I didn't intentionally violate the policy. It wasn't my intent, which could be true. But you may still lose because the hearing officer may say, I'm sorry, I'm not concerned about your intent. Did you know is what I'm concerned about it.
And how important does the policy have to be? I mean, again, I gave the example of you parked in the wrong parking place. I mean, it seems to me even if you did that repeatedly, that seems like it shouldn't lead to a dismissal. How important does the policy have to be? Or does it matter at all?
Unfortunately, with a determined supervisor who has it in for an employee, it doesn't have to be that important. It could be any policy. But the good news is, with proper preparation, you don't necessarily have to give up, because even if there is a policy, and even if the employer can argue that it was violated, you may have a bunch of defenses. You don't have to walk away from this. The policy might be ambiguous. It might be open to two reasonable interpretations, for example.
And those would be the type of defenses you would raise.
Absolutely. You want to raise as many defenses as you can. When I write a grievance, I write multiple issues. I never write one issue.
And so finally, if you lose the grievance hearing before this state-appointed hearing officer, whether it's the full-timer or one of the part-timers, is there any recourse? Can you appeal to court? And if so, what's that procedure like?
Anybody could do a grievance, but not all grievances are going to go to a hearing. Same thing is true here. You could lose your grievance case, and anybody can go to court and file a petition for review of that loss. However, you're going to be immediately thrown out of the ballpark if the issue you're bringing to the court is not what they call a question of law. And this is different than the normal administrative procedure in Virginia for appealing like state agencies' actions, not to employees, but to others. It has to be a question of law. For example, say you raised a Fourth Amendment issue in your grievance case. That's clearly a question of law. But there are other questions. Most grievance cases don't have questions of law. They have simply questions of fact and policy. However, it's to your advantage if you and your lawyer can think of questions of law to insert.
So this sounds a lot like appealing a denial of an unemployment compensation case, where the statute says the findings of fact, if supported by evidence and in the absence of fraud, are conclusive and the jurisdiction of the court is confined to questions of law. Is it that narrow a review?
It's narrower. It's harder than even that. Because in the unemployment realm, you can always appeal and you're going to get a hearing. You're going to get a review at the next level of the unemployment. But in this case, you're not even going to get a review if you can't show to the judge that it's a question of law. And if you can show it's a question of law and then brief it for the judge, you're going to get a serious review. But again, most cases don't have questions of law, and it's up to you and your lawyer to insert these questions of law.
So I gather it's important to get representation well before the grievance hearing. Afterwards, it's basically too late. Katie, bar the door.
Yes, I would agree with that completely. And my motto is always consultation, not hesitation. Yes.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with employment law attorney Mark Barron at his law office in the far west end of the city of Richmond about the grievance and employment rights of state and local and federal employees. Thank you so much for being on the show, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Many credit card companies and almost all debt buyers file collection actions having only very skimpy evidence. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when consumer law attorney Charles Crumbine explains how to defend against a credit card collection simply by making them prove it. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.